Let's move on to our new segment, the listener question. It's from Sean in Canberra. Who has the best kicking game of the teams left in the title race? Tigers MS, we'll start with you.
Well, I think North Queensland's kicking game on the weekend was outstanding. I thought Melbourne's was quite good, as it always is, but it wasn't spectacular. I thought the best kicking game of the weekend belonged to Canberra, to be honest. Every kick almost turned the Sharks around and put them in the corner. And obviously, you know, their kick chase was quite good. Now, with the... I think for Souths, the big improvement could come from a better kicking game. Well, for one of the things that they could improve on. And Manly will find it a bit tough if Cherry Evans puts in a performance like he did on Friday.
Yeah, it was pretty inept.
Yeah, he needs to discover that the touch he had in the the rounds before the finals if they're to trouble the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think you can break it down to attacking kicks and the other type. You're probably right, the Cowboys maybe have the most well-rounded with Thurston and Bowen. They can kick long, but they can also, they're also very potent inside the 20. I think Melbourne, just for the depth with both Kronk and Smith out of dummy half, I think they're very, very strong. But maybe inside the 20, they get taken by the Cowboys. So it's very, very tight between those two. There's no doubt that Adam Reynolds and John Sutton were good throughout the year, and they've got Greg Inglis as well. So it remains to be seen if they come back. And you can't underrate Canterbury. I thought Chris Keating's try, that was a magnificent try, and you know, I was a little bit surprised about how good it was.
I think everyone was surprised.
It was a real, you know, obviously it was a match-winning play.
Pete,
how do you make the kicking games of the six remaining teams? Do you agree with Tigers MS? Are the Raiders the dark horse because of their improved kicking game under Sam Williams and Josh McCrone?
And Josh Sam Duke. Williams is, like we said about McCrone, Sam Williams is a very underrated player and has a decent long boot on him. They also, with their attacking kicks, seem to really concentrate on the Cronulla wing there the other day. Young replacement winger there for Cronulla, I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Stapleton, probably. Yeah. Isaac Gordon had a tough night, have a tough day.
Yeah.
Both their wingers did struggle. Stapleton actually kicked out, was the one that kicked out on the full.
That's right, yeah. That we had, they had several of those, both wings. I thought their kicking game was very, very good. Melbourne's was aided and abetted by the ineptitude of South Sydney, but even so, Cronk was still getting them very long into the in-goal, a few pulling up the in-goal area, just going dead, which is, you know, great, getting the opposition coming off the 20-metre restart. But yeah, Thurston with his kicking game, he can, as I say, he's got the ball on a string, Thurston, at times, so pardon the cliche, but yeah, I'd look at both the Cowboys and Melbourne myself as the best kicking games in the comp. I sort of tend to lean towards Melbourne just because of Cameron Smith's great short kicking game out of dummy half as well. They get quite a few tries off kicks.
Yeah, and Cooper Cronk won the Warren Ryan medal on ABC radio. His kicking game has just been outstanding this year, both for Melbourne and Queensland, so can't discount the Storm, that is for sure. Guys, it's time to move on. Semi-finals this week. Manly take on the Cowboys. Well, I can tell you that Manly have named Jamie Lyon as captain in the centres. Dean Farre moves in the centres with him because Steve Maddai hasn't been picked. Michael Oldfield will be on the wing. But it remains, of course, to be seen if Lyon can take his place. The Cowboys, well, their halves look settled now with Thurston back at six and Michael Morgan at halfback had a good game last week. And a very strong forward pack. Gavin Cooper's been named. Let's take a look at how the two teams match up. They're under referee Shane Hayne. I don't have the second referee there. I've only got Shane Hayne. I don't know if I if either of you guys can help me out there, but I could tell you that at the Sydney Football Stadium, Manly have won 30 and lost 20, total of 50 games. And the Cowboys, well, they've won 7 and lost 11 there. Head-to-head there, it's 2-0 to Manly. So, and under Shane Hain, Manly have won 31 out of 45, only lost to 14. Well, the Cowboys have won 9, drawn 1 and lost 22. So as well as the Cowboys are playing, they're going to have to reverse some pretty damning stats to get over the top of Manly. Tigers MS, which way do you see it going?
Just quickly, the referee is the Shane Hain and Ben Cummins.
Okay.
Yeah, I think North Queensland are actually going to knock over Manly. And I'm basing this purely on the fact that I think Jamie Lyon will be out. Even if he's not out, he's definitely not going to be 100%. And the way the attack is working for the Cowboys, I think they're really going to run around, run the big guys around that Manly have, like Jason King, Brent Kite, Tony Williams. I mean, he was largely ineffectual against the Bulldogs, except when he woke up for a couple of rounds.
he did some great things, didn't he? And then he did do some great things.
it was a very mixed game for Tony Williams. But I just think across the board the Cowboys are playing far too well as a team, I think, to get beaten by Manly, who didn't look like they were at the top of their game against the Dogs.
And Pete, who do you see winning it?
I totally agree with Tigers MS there. I think that the Cowboys will get up. Just with Steve Maddow not being named, it has been announced that he's accepted the one match plea, so he definitely won't be there for that game. I think he's also a big loss as you say, with Lyon not being fit. Cowboys, they did go to sleep a couple of times against Brisbane last week themselves. If they do that, they might be in trouble, but I think the Cowboys will get up in quite a close game. I've tipped the Cowboys there by about 6 to 8 points.
Look, I think it's a tough matchup for Manly. I know they won up there 8-6 earlier this year, but if they were playing Canberra, I would pick the Eagles. I think the Cowboys were one of 5 teams that were a cut above the rest this year. And that's where it's really going to cost Manly, because Manly will have to be at their best to beat North Queensland. And if Jamie Lyon in particular doesn't play, certainly the form that they bring into the game suggests they aren't going to be at their best. And even a top 4 team at 90%, I don't think can beat the Cowboys. They are definitely a dark horse. They are a better team than their 5th place position suggests, and they only missed out by 4 and against. Or no, they didn't actually. They missed out by 1 win. Sorry, their 4 and against was actually better. But I think the Cowboys will upset the trend, and the trend I can only take from AFL, because we're under a new system, obviously, or a renewed system with the top 4 and the bottom 4. Usually you'll see the top 4 teams that lost rebound the next week. But in this case, I think the Cowboys may buck that trend. Saturday night football is South Sydney versus Canberra. Now, Souths were pretty ordinary last week. They have a chance at redemption with a second home game. Canberra will have to travel, but they've travelled very well this year. No Jared Croker, as we were saying earlier. Joel Thompson will actually come in the centres to replace him. That's a little bit of a surprise move. There's a huge bench named of 7, including one Jack Whiten, who played in the under-20s last week and was very good coming off the bench. So don't be surprised if he ends up playing there, possibly on the wing or even the centres, and Reece Robinson could move into the centres. For South Sydney, well, they will be looking to certainly make amends for last week's performance. Isaac Luke's on the bench, Nathan Peet's named at hooker. Probably that was the most interesting and controversial decision made there from the team names. Let's look quickly at their overall. They've played 45 times. Canberra have won 27. Souths have won 18. At Homebush, ANZ Stadium, Souths have won 42, drawn 1, lost 42, while Canberra have won 11 and lost 6. So it looks good for the Raiders there. Tigers MS, who do you think's going to win? And if you've got the referees as well, that would be handy, because I don't have them for some reason.
Okay. Well, I think Canberra are actually going to do the job here. Just looking at Souths last week, they seemed a little overawed, and maybe that wouldn't happen against a team like Canberra, but just looking at it, you got Josh Dugan up against Greg Inglis, you've got Shandor Earl, I don't know why his name is Shandor, but apparently that's his name, the H is silent and invisible.
Okay.
and then you've got... yeah, the two halves, which Sam Williams is not... I'm not suggesting Sam Williams is going as well as Adam Reynolds, but he's improving each week, and Josh McCrone is taking a lot of pressure off him. John Sutton is prone to those games where he floats in and out, and you just can't afford those in semi-finals. The thing I'm really looking forward to in this game is the forward battle. Both packs are very, very big.
Yeah.
Having Schilling up against
Josh
Burgess, Papali against Tilts, Papali against Pettibourne. Yeah, really good. It would be a really good game. I think Dave Taylor also had a case of the Tony Williams on the weekend.
Yeah, talking about a guy that needs to step it up.
Yeah, and I think Canberra just have the momentum. They have a lot of momentum going into this. Souths probably on a bit of a down, which might help them out. I don't know. I think Canberra will have too much for them. Sorry, and the referees... is Matt Check and Tony Archer.
So the four referees, probably the biggest named referees in the game, have got the nod this weekend. Pete, Souths, can they come back, or will the Raiders continue their winning ways this weekend?
I've been umming and ahhing about this game. it is a really, really tough call. I was thinking Canberra earlier on, but South Sydney have been pretty good all year to me. As you said, they won't have the intimidation factor. I tell you what, I don't know what was said, but I don't think I'll forget the tongue lashing from Michael Maguire at half five. South Sydney are too good a side to play two really bad games in a row, and with the experience they have with blokes like Asatazi, Sam Burgess, etc. I think, and playing at home, don't underestimate the strength of the Barrow out there. They get a lot of supporters along the games at the Olympic Stadium, even though it's not in South Sydney. I'm just going to tip South Sydney in this one. I think it's going to be an absolute humdinger of a game. And I'll take South Sydney by only a couple of points. But yeah, guys, it's going to be a massive forward battle. Really looking forward to that. Inglis, once again, South Sydney had no ball in this game the other day. Although they started to play okay there late in the second half when it was all gone. But
They were very ill-disciplined. They gave away stupid penalty after stupid penalty, usually on the fifth tackle.
Terrible. Maguire, I think, would be drumming it into them all week. The loss of Jared Braker, I didn't realise till tonight that he was going to be out. The loss of Jared Braker as a player and also as a goal kicker as well is crucial. We saw was it Reece Robertson, I think, and Josh Dugan take about
three. It was Blake Ferguson and Josh Dugan.
Yeah.
Missed them all.
Yep. And I think Blake Ferguson's due for a bad game too. It's been far too consistent the last week. Bit of a heartbreaker, but I think South Sydney will just get up in this one. It'll be an absolute cracker jack of a game. I reckon it'll be the best finals game so far.
Look, I think you're right. I think it'll go down to the wire. I think it'll be 2 or 4 point game. I've said all along South would be bounced out of the finals, but I agree with you. I think that they will come back and win this game. The matchup is good for them, and probably the best thing that could have happened last week was to lose the way they lost. I know it sounds funny, But had they lost an intense game, a game where they played at their best, but Melbourne was still too good for them, I don't think they would have mentally been able to get up again the next week and emotionally. They're just not there yet as a football team. They certainly have the talent. They've got the right coach. But, you know, as we've said earlier, they're still probably a year away. But this is the one game that they can get themselves up for. Canberra have been on a massive run. At some point, they've got to dip a little. I still think the Raiders are going to come out hard and play really, really well. I just think that the kicking, goal-kicking game is going to be the difference. If they can't, maybe Jack Whiten kicks. I don't know what their plan is. But no doubt that if their kicking game's off, Canberra will end up losing this one by 2 or 4. And as you say, Pete, those fans will come out in droves and may get the Rabbitohs home. Anyway, we've gone long. Look, it is a big week again of footy. We're going to have to move on to World of Sport. And Tigers MS, what have you got for us?
Yeah, I've got some Pakistan cricket news, which is always exciting. They weren't happy that Syed Ajmal was snubbed in the ICC Test Player of the Year. He didn't get into the final nominations. So the Pakistan cricket chief, Zakir Ashraf, announced on Monday that a special award for Syed Ajmal would be made or awarded to him to compensate for the fact that he was omitted from the Best Test Players Award nominees. He said that they weren't really happy that despite him taking 72 wickets in 12 tests, that he wasn't considered. That it also provoked anger in Pakistan, with former players urging the Pakistan Cricket Board to boycott the awards ceremony due to take place in Colombo, Sri Lanka. Mr. Ashraf goes on to say, Ajmal is the world's best bowler, and we congratulate him. And when he comes back from the World T20, we will give him an award of our own for being the number one bowler in the world. He said the PCB hasn't decided yet on a boycott of the awards ceremony. That would be an extreme step, but we are under tremendous pressure to do so. Ajmal is also ranked number one in the ICC rankings for one-day cricket. The ICC said that the independent 32-man jury comprising former players, officials and media men shortlisted the players. Now, what I want to know is this award going to be sort of like the one that Mr. Burns gave to Homer Simpson, the
outstanding achievement in the field of excellence.
It's going to be something like that I'm at a loss. There's no comment from Ajmal here, so I don't know if he'd be even bothered by it, but who knows.
Look, in America, they have the World Series of Baseball that features two American teams. So, you know, why can't Pakistan just have their own awards and call it the World Awards?
Why not?
I guess that's the way they're heading. Pete, your turn. What have you got?
Okay, big week in tennis, and what a massive year for Britain in world sport. As you can hear my tone, I'm absolutely elated with that. But it's good to see Andy Murray finally break through for a Grand Slam win the other day, beating Novak Djokovic in the final of the US Open. But forever we've been hearing he's the last, he's now the previous Brit to win a Grand Slam was Fred Perry, and he's still the most recent Brit to win Wimbledon. Yeah, who do you say? Very interesting man. He last won Wimbledon in 1936.
Okay.
So I'll give you just a quick rundown on Fred Perry, but very interesting. Born 1909, died 2nd of February 1995 in Melbourne. He was actually attending the Australian Open. Last British man to win Wimbledon, achieved on three occasions, 34, 35 and 36. The first man to win all four Grand Slam titles, Wimbledon, Australian, French and American championships. They're not in the same year. Wimbledon record reached semi-final once in five attempts before 1934 and won mixed doubles twice. Won a total of 8 Grand Slam titles, 3 in the USA and 1 in each in Australia and France. He also played a pivotal role as Britain won the Davis Cup 4 years running, 33 to 36. But even more interesting than that, that Fred Perry came from a very, very working class background. He didn't get the opportunity to play tennis until he was about 11 or so, and his family moved to the outskirts of London. Coming from a poor background, he became a very good player, but sort of wanted to cash in on his fame, and that didn't make him too popular with the people at Wimbledon. With the snooty noses at Wimbledon, he was not very well liked, and actually overheard a Wimbledon official say to Australian player Jack Crawford when Perry beat him in 1934 that the better player lost today. And that really rankled with Fred Perry for a heck of a long time. He, as I said, he won in 36, but never went back and played there again. He did not attend there for quite a long time and actually was more revered in America. He moved to America after World War II, actually had a sporting apparel line as well. Eventually, he did go back to Wimbledon, and there was a statue unveiled in his honour at Wimbledon, which is still there today. And the quote from one of the officials said, "At the start of 37, Perry thus found himself a sporting outcast in his homeland. He was relieved of his honorary membership of the prestigious All England Club, awarded to him as Wimbledon champion. On his professional tour visit of Britain, he was barred from appearing on the courts of any lawn tennis associated affiliated club." And so he then built a new life around business enterprises after the war. Of course, his career was interrupted by the war as well. And he was more welcomed back after tennis finally embraced professionalism after 1968. But the reconciliation only became complete towards the end of his life. His appreciation unveiling of the statue in 1984, nearly 50 years after he won, was enhanced when the All England Club chairman said he hoped the pedigree of Wimbledon was today the most hospitable of clubs in contrast to the unfriendliness of earlier times. So there you go, eh? Interesting career, and now not the last British man to win a Grand Slam title.
There you go, indeed.
Yeah, well, Murray is British today. If he had lost, he was a Scot.
Yeah, just right. Ask him north of the border how British he is.
That's exactly right. Yeah, he created some controversy years ago at the Soccer World Cup finals, and he said he was, because Scotland didn't make it, asking, was he going for England, and he said no. I don't think it would have been the only Scot with that opinion, mate.
Most Scots, I lived there for a couple of years, most Scots go for the team that plays England.
Yes.
There's even T-shirts that you can buy that says, "My first team is Scotland, my second team whoever plays England." All right, guys, we've got to keep moving. It has been a very long show. My World of Sport. A former NRL player is accused of blackmailing a Sydney man for more than $100,000 on three separate occasions. Former rugby league winger, you might remember him, Andrew Michael Frew. He played for Parramatta, Manly and St. George Illawarra over a career that spanned from 97 to 2004. He's now 37 and a father of two. He appeared on Tuesday via audiovisual link in Sydney's Central Local Court, where he pleaded not guilty and he was granted bail. He was arrested on Friday, charged with one count of demanding money with menaces and three counts of blackmail. Police allege that Frew and a co-accused visited a resident in Lane Cove on three occasions between June 17 and September 4 this year, and they demanded money before driving the person to several ATMs, forcing him to withdraw thousands of dollars. The first three attempts totaled $3,500, and their final attempt was for $100,000.
Wow.
So, I don't know quite what's gone on there. In August, Frew pleaded guilty to possessing a prohibited drug. Court papers show police arrived at the Vulcan Hotel. I don't know if that's named after the ex-gladiator. Vulcan Hotel in Ultimo, following a complaint that someone had used a fraudulent credit card to obtain a room. When officers entered the room, they heard a rustle of activity in the bathroom before Frew told him he had ice hidden in his underwear. Police performed a strip search of the accused, during which the accused pulled a small, clear, resealable plastic bag containing a granular substance from his anus cavity, court documents state. Now, I don't know if Frew played in the same era as John Hopewadi, but that's very interesting.
Yes, that's a good question. And what was the ice in his underwear? Not the frozen stuff, I assume.
He was just nursing an old footy injury, apparently.
No, was John Elias in the room?
Should have listened to Fatty Vorton and applied the deep heat.
Oh.
He lives with his father, his 7-year-old son and 5-year-old daughter, coaches an under-8 footies team. That wouldn't like my kid to be on that team. Frew's prior convictions include drugs and driving offences. He was granted strict conditional bail before being ordered to appear in the same court on September 25. There you go, guys. Not only the end of World of Sport, but the show. I hope everyone out there has enjoyed it. Of course, you can listen to us by downloading the show every week during the season. www.paulygsports.com, and you can follow both myself and TigersMS on Twitter. He's at TigersMS78 and I'm at PaulyGSports. We'll see you guys again next week. Pete, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, guys.
TigersMS, as we said earlier, no West Tigers live this week, but we will record one again next week. West Tigers under 20s team have the week off, but Balmain Ride Eastwood are playing against Wentworthville for a right to make the Final Four.
Yep.
And so we'll talk to you next week as well.
Will do.
See you guys.
Thanks, Al.